This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of April 15th, 2019. I'm Mason King.
How can you expect people to come back if you never ask? And we never ask as a state. We don't know where our 8th grade science fair winners go. We don't know where the Lilly scholars go. We just wave and hope they'll come back. That's not how it works.
Welcome back to the podcast. Now today we're going to hit you with a pitch right off the bat. If you are an Indiana native or someone who graduated from an in-state school but who now lives somewhere else, Bill Osterly wants you, or at least he wants to know more about you and whether you would be interested in moving back. Now, Bill is a Purdue University grad, a former CEO of Angie's List, and the manager of Mitch Daniels' first campaign for governor in 2004, and he is intensely interested in workforce issues and has championed the concept of brain gain, bringing talented workers back to the state. So last year, he founded a company called TeamMap. It uses big data tools and machine learning algorithms to comb available data and find folks who might be willing to come back for the right job offer. His clients are employers looking for candidates for particular positions, and TeamMap tries to play matchmaker. Now, TeamMap already has a database of about 3 million people who went to school in Indiana in the last 25 years, but who don't currently live here. By July, it hopes to have identified at least 10,000 who would be willing to move back for the right position. And last month, Osterly announced that TeamApp has raised $1 million in seed funding. And with me now is Bill Osterly. Bill, how's it going?
Very well, Mason. Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks for helping us out today.
Sure.
I'm going to play dumb for a second. Unemployment in Indiana is minuscule. It's 3.5%, which is lower than the national average. So you could look at that and say, hey, we're doing a great job filling the available positions. What is the problem that you're trying to solve here?
The problem for Indiana is we're just on the cusp of it. Our workforce, its growth, the number of people available to take a job, that's been slowing dramatically for the last couple of decades. Starting in 2020, so for the next 10 years, our workforce is actually going to contract. It's going to shrink, just demographically. And that's the first time in Indiana history that the workforce is going to contract. That has huge implications for the Indiana economy and for businesses here in the state.
We also talk a lot in workforce development about there being kind of a shallow job pool in Indiana for high skill positions. Is that also something that you're trying to address?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, given the numbers I just described, the pool is about to get smaller across the whole pool. That is particularly acute for high skill jobs, but it's much broader than high-skilled jobs.
Let's say I'm an Indiana expatriate. I went to high school and college in Indiana. Then I got out of Dodge, and now I'm in Boston or Silicon Valley. I'm identified by TeamApp. How would I be contacted about returning to Indiana?
Well, we'll contact you based on signals that we look for that you have some affinity to the state. So, for example, we could determine if you still had family here, or if you ever did, or is your spouse from Indiana? Is his or her family still here? All of those things are knowable. We can build a psychographic profile on you. And based on that, then we can determine, hey, should we attempt to reach out to you or not? And then we have various vehicles, social media, and advertising all the way to direct mail and email to put a pitch in front of you. Just, hey, are you interested in coming back, or are you interested in job opportunities in Indiana, and we see if you raise your hand.
Where does all this data come from?
That's the wonderful thing about the World Wide Web. It's both scary and wonderful, but all of that data is out there and available. We all know that, you know, Amazon and Facebook have profiles built on us that are comprehensive. As far as we know, we're the only organization that's ever attempted to build that type of psychographic profile on us as members of the labor force. And so that's what we're doing, and specifically for people who could be members of the Indiana labor force.
So give me some examples of sources of data.
All social media sites, public records. Like, a bunch of our data has been to go identify people who went to college in Indiana, and that has come from LinkedIn. It's come from the university's own publications of their graduates. What makes this business possible is the proliferation of accessible data.
So would you look at my Facebook page?
Sure, absolutely.
And LinkedIn, I would assume.
Yep. If we could pick you up off a Twitter feed, Pinterest, I mean, all of that. And then there's all the public data that's on
Property records.
All of that.
And you could find out if I have a criminal record.
That's correct. All we're doing is prioritizing, taking a group of people that we think have some chance of coming back because of an identifiable characteristic, and then beginning to fill out their psychographic profile and ranking them, prioritizing them for contact and outreach.
What kind of stuff gets weighted heavier?
You can build a scoring system based on any criteria you want. The specific skills will get weighted, but then we put a bunch of emphasis on family and community ties. What are your affinities to communities in Indiana?
And you can know that I'm a Pacer fan. I live in Chicago, but man, I love my Pacers. You can find that out.
So it's really less about the weighting than about accumulative. How many of those points of affinity do you have? Okay, your spouse is from here. You have family here. You're a Pacer fan. You came back for the Super Bowl. All of it.
How do you know if I came back for the Super Bowl?
A bunch of that is knowable. You know,
I posted a picture on my Facebook feed of me.
Yes,
in front of the
exactly. I mean, those things cumulatively point to you as a good candidate. We'll do targeted social media advertising. You know, we can get pretty close to you, and then it's you responding, or we'll find organizations that you have an affinity with, like we've done with Purdue or IU, where they'll actually reach out to you and say, hey, are you interested? We're working with an organization that's connecting people to Indiana jobs. Is that something you'd like to do? We try to get in a position where you say, yeah, I'm interested. I'll have a discussion with you, which is far and away the biggest step. Once you've done that, then it's easy. It's finding the people who might say that. That's what we're about.
So if I'm an Indiana expatriate and working out of state, should I assume that you already have a profile on me?
If you graduated from an Indiana-based university in the last 25 years, there's a very good chance we have one. We're beginning to move into high schools so that we can pick up the graduates that went somewhere else.
And these organizations are sharing that information?
Some are, and others we just go get it. I mean, that we started with the premise that we're going to have to come up with this ourselves. And still to this day, the vast majority of our data is what we were able to compile.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Is the majority of this automated? You probably don't have one person going through everybody's names in their past.
That's not beneath us, but I was fortunate to recruit some of the old engineers from Angie's List, and they've been great, as always.
So to this point, how many out-of-state people have you connected with jobs in Indiana?
We've had placements of about 20, 25 people. The longest part of the process is actually the matching. Once you get down to, okay, this person going into this job, that's an art. You know, that's still a lot of heavy lifting. What we're trying to do is pre-qualify the candidates such that it's much easier to get to that point.
Are you just looking for people with tech experience, like programmers or
data engineers? No, that's what this is. What I actually really love about this work is once you develop this framework of willing and able and a scoring system, you can apply that to anything, arts, community, everything.
What typically is the biggest obstacle, at least so far, to bringing somebody back?
This is the differentiator for us. We skip the obstacle. If there's an obstacle, we go look for the person where there isn't an obstacle. If we have enough people, which Indiana has produced a disproportionate number of college graduates, we're 18th in the country in college degrees produced per capita. We're 40th in college degrees held per capita. So we're exporting lots and lots and lots of talent. Great. If you have the numbers, somebody says, well, I want an ocean, I want a mountain. Fine. We'll go to the person that wants to be around their family or wants to get back to their community.
So the goal of TMAP, the way I'm reading this, is somewhat altruistic. I mean, you want to strengthen the Indiana economy by bringing qualified people in to fill jobs.
No question.
But this is also a business.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Good. It's actually going faster. A year and a half ago, I wonder if we could go find all the college graduates. I wonder if we could get any of them to raise their hand. I wonder if we could place any of them. Well, we've done all that stuff in a relatively short period of time. And also, what I'm really gratified by is that, we're tapping into something at the community level. People get what we're trying to do. The whole thing that got me going here was, if we can organize collectively to recruit, we all get really good at recruiting. First off, by knowing who we're going after, specifically who we're going after. Then we can move to the forefront. No one else in the country is doing this. And we might actually be able to change this workforce issue, which would make us the only state in the Midwest or the Northeast that has a growing workforce. That seems kind of cool to me. The thing that has been far and away the best is that we're tapping into a collective effort to address this problem. When we go talk to people at IU or Ball State or Purdue, they get it. When we talk to mayors like Mayor Fadness, he gets it. We're working on a project with Hamilton Southeastern Schools to identify their talent. Where did it go? Has anyone bothered to ask them if they want to come back? Shouldn't we?
So you've had 20 or so placements so far. What is the, I don't know if it's ceiling is the right word, but what can we honestly expect when you hit a stride?
Look, we think, given that we're suddenly sourcing thousands of willing people, we certainly know there are hundreds of companies that have open positions. We think we can be crossing those transactions in the thousands of people.
Annually.
Yeah, it just ought to work. We have a lot to do to make that process efficient, but the macro numbers say companies are going to be desperate for this talent. We're out identifying willing talent that ought to work.
So let's say you can get to 3,000 a year, mm-hmm. 3,000 placements a year. Is that possible?
I certainly think it's okay. Possible.
Is that enough to really make an impact?
Yeah, really well, okay, just so we can talk about the specific numbers, there's this great data that Indiana University, the Kelley School, puts together. Professor Kinghorn produces this stuff. It's easy to read, it's clear, it's fascinating. But according to him and his numbers, we're going to lose 30,000 people out of the workforce in the next 10 years. Well, you pick...
Just so we can give people a sense of what the workforce is. Currently, yeah. It's, what, 3.1, 3.2 million?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Also, to give them a sense, like 10 years ago, we were adding 15,000 a year. Mm-hmm. The decade before that, it was 30,000 a year.
So the point being that it has really grown right up until now, but it's supposed to start stagnating.
Yeah, well, it's declining. We're going to lose 30,000 over the next 10 years. Well, you picked the number 3,000 per year. I didn't prompt you with that. If we were able to recruit in 3,000 marginal people to the labor force, we would return back to break even. If we were able to bring back 10,000, then we'd be back to reasonable growth. I think those numbers are achievable. Now, I think TMAP may not be the one that crosses all of those transactions, but we can put a meaningful dent in it. And certainly, if we're working with communities and Indy Chamber is a client of ours, well, gosh, now maybe 10,000 is a reasonable number. If we're going to hire 10,000, let's go find the most willing and able 10,000 that are out there, and that's what we can help with.
And from a business model standpoint, if you were to bring in several thousand a year, you could at least continue operating.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah,
I mean, that's... Do better.
Yeah, for businesses, this is their most valuable asset, so they're willing to pay for good people. It's increasingly becoming the most important aspect of company strategy. It's a very viable for-profit enterprise. You didn't ask, but I'll answer. We set up as a for-profit business because that's the only way I know how to scale an enterprise. If you try to fund something like this as a not-for-profit, you can't ever get enough weight behind it to make a difference. We're set up, we have to be delivering value every time we place somebody.
Will this always stay focused on Indiana, or will there come a point you decide, wow, this whole idea works great. Maybe we could give this to somebody else.
Yeah, we've actually had an overture from Arkansas. Look, I'm a Hoosier. All of us that work on the company are Hoosiers, either native-born or imported. It's a big enough opportunity just in Indiana for the foreseeable future. Let's weaponize it for Indiana first, and then we'll see.
And how is Purdue involved?
Yeah, they've been out. The whole brain gain initiative that you mentioned, that's Mitch's. He's been a long-term advocate of this, going on offense to address this. Let's go get our talent. Purdue's been fantastic. They've allowed us to contact their alumni. Mitch sent a video message. They've put a bunch of promotional work behind it. Other universities are doing the same. IU's got a program going. This is what I was talking about when I said there's some community energy behind this. It serves all of us if we work together to attempt to go recruit.
So speaking of former Governor Daniels, that you worked for him, I think, back at the Hudson Institute.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I've worked for him 3 times. Yeah.
And he, tell me the story here. I don't know how many years ago this was, when he essentially kind of gave you that pitch, which was, please come back.
It's a fascinating story, at least to me, and it's fundamentally the genesis of all of this. It was 1989, and I was working for him at Hudson. He had encouraged me to apply to Harvard Business School, which I just never, I don't know, I just didn't think of it. You know, I didn't think people like me went to Harvard. And I applied, and through some error in admissions, I was accepted. I was getting ready to leave, and Mitch bought me breakfast. And, you know, just really nice of him to do. He sat across, said, look, Bill, this is congratulations. This is going to be a world-changing experience for you. Open your eyes. You know, what do you think you might do when you get done with it? And I thought I knew the audience. You know, I thought I had the answer. I'm like, well, you know, Mitch, I'd like to come back to the Midwest. You know, I've traveled around. I like it here. He stood up in his chair over breakfast. He starts pointing at me, like finger in the chest kind of thing. It's like, Midwest, you need to come back to Indiana. You owe it to us, right? Like, what do I owe Indiana? You know, it was an amazing conversation for all sorts of reasons. You know, he's pretty persuasive. He, you know, was the his approach to it, everything. But the most fascinating thing about that conversation by far was that he was the only person who ever said that to me. Not my parents, not my friends, not my school, no one. And that has always stuck with me. Why should it be some random breakfast that I get that message? You know, talented individuals that this state produces all the time. Why aren't we delivering that message at scale? And that's what got me into this. And the fact that we have to address these demographic issues, if we can't grow the state with a declining workforce, we just can't. So we have to do something.
Was Mitch the reason why you came back?
I don't know if that did it or not, but I sure remember.
Great. Well, let's check back in a year and see how it goes.
No, I'd love that. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks.
My thanks again to Bill Osterly. Before you get on with your week, I wanted to draw your attention to some stories featured in this week's print edition of IBJ. John Russell reports on the sudden collapse of Wellfound Corp., an Indianapolis-based pharmacy company that raised $50 million to fund a revolutionary vending system in use in nursing homes across the Midwest. But last month, it quietly shut its doors, informed customers, and laid off at least some of its employees. Also in this week's paper, Susan Orr explains how the struggling Scotty's Brewhouse chain plans to pull itself out of bankruptcy. The big shift would be restructuring its ownership, in addition to improving the quality of its food and service. And Haley Colombo delves into the new 5-year plan from the Central Indiana Community Foundation. It involves tackling criminal justice reform, reinvesting in poor neighborhoods, and pushing back against the economic impact of institutional racism. Again, you can read all about it in a copy of IBJ that you undoubtedly have delivered to your home or office or at IBJ.com. And as always, if you would like unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning content, just hit the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.